On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The state Senate is expected to wrap up its work this week. And by the numbers, more than 750 bills were introduced in this regular session. That's from the Status of Business in the Legislature tracking document. Democratic State Senator John Erpenbach of West Point was first elected to the chamber in 98. He announced in December he would not seek a seventh term. What policy issues or bills do you want to ask him about over the decades? How should Democrats approach the midterms and campaigning for open seats? It's 800-642-1234. John Erpenbach's district is in south-central Wisconsin, includes Baraboo, Mazamani, Mount Horeb, and New Glarus, serves on the legislature's budget writing committee. State Senator John Erpenbach, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks, Kate. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's start with your redistricting reaction, if you will. The state Supreme Court narrowly voting in favor of Governor Evers' maps Thursday. How do you feel about this outcome and what the Supreme Court selected?
Well, I think we're dealing with fair maps to start with. And the key word is start. We have a long way to go in reforming the way we draw our maps here in the state. I don't think the legislature should have any part of it. It's probably the most self-serving, selfish thing, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans doing it, that the legislature does. So it's a good start. I'm glad that the Supreme Court sided with the governor's maps. And again, it's a step. They're fair, but we have a long way to go.
Republicans have asked the High Court to block the ruling Friday, and they plan to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. Do you think SCOTUS will take this up?
I hope not, but, you know, that's not unexpected. That's what they do. The Republicans have gone to court just about every step of the way. Remember back during the pandemic when the governor tried to do things, they just run to court. So that's what they do. So if you're a lawyer in the state of Wisconsin and you're not making money off the Republicans right now, something's wrong.
So, as you say, these maps are a starting point or going in the right direction as you see them. Do you think, as a Democrat, should Governor Evers have tried harder to even the playing field on these district maps?
I think the governor did a great job. He did the best he possibly could do to submit maps that were fair, but also had a chance of actually becoming law. So, given what's going on at the Capitol right now, Kent, or Kate, and the way things have been checking out politically, I think the governor did a great job.
Let's move on to Lincoln Hills. The political chapter of the state's youth prison appears to be closing as both chambers approved this nearly $42 million facility in Milwaukee County. How do you feel about this ending?
It's good. I think it's really good. I don't think it should have taken as long as it took, but we're here and that's a good thing. The Senate will deal with it, I believe, tomorrow. We dealt with it on the Finance Committee. We just had to meet to okay one provision within the legislation, but it's good. I mean, this is something that should have been dealt with a while ago, and the governor offered up ideas. Democrats offered up ideas. Republicans did as well, finally, so here we are.
As you mentioned, the Budget Writing Committee, Joint Finance, which you sit on, signed off on the Assembly's version Thursday. The Senate expected to do so tomorrow. But under the bill, local officials and Joint Finance Committee would have to approve the specific plans for it. Do you see that this could be a potential future sticking point that would slow down a facility in Milwaukee County coming to fruition?
Boy, I really hope not, because, again, the Democrats and Republicans agreed, and I believe the governor is going to sign off on it. So I don't know why the Finance Committee would get in the way of something Milwaukee County wants to do and has okayed. Finance's job is to make sure that we are there to help local governments when they make their decisions as best as we possibly can. So I don't see it as a sticking point, but, you know, you never know.
How do you feel about the plan to convert Lincoln Hills then into an adult prison?
Boy, Kate, that's a really tough question. We have prisons in Wisconsin. We actually have, in my opinion, too many people locked up for all the wrong reasons in our prisons. So I'm not a fan of creating more space to put more people in prison for drug-related offenses, for example, nonviolent drug-related offenses. That's addiction. People have mental health issues and they shouldn't be locked up. So, you know, I don't know how I feel about it, to be honest.
Talking with State Senator John Erpenbach, Democrat, represents Western Dane County, parts of Greensock, Iowa, and Columbia counties. You can join in. What questions do you have for the state senator? Have you seen politics change at the state capitol over your lifetime? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Before we move on from prisons, Lincoln Hills not immune from overtime. Governor Evers signed those 15 bills Friday, including one involving overtime reports by the Corrections Department. And they become an annual report to Joint Finance on the use of overtime, the cost of overtime, the reason for it. How do you feel about chronic worker shortages at our prisons and what it will take to rein in overtime spending?
Well, what it's going to take to rein in overtime spending is, first of all, more employees, more correctional officers. Secondly, making sure it's as safe as it possibly can be for the correctional officers who work those jobs, really difficult jobs. And third, there's a shortage because this goes back to Act 10. You know, whether it's teachers, whether it's correctional officers, whether it's other public employees who basically said the hell with it after Act 10. And retired. And it's been very difficult to fill those jobs for a long, long time. And it still is today.
The Wisconsin Policy Forum, as you bring up Act 10, they released a report last month and it found Wisconsin union membership has been cut in half over the last two decades. Is that surprising to you at all?
No, because that was the goal of Act 10, whether it was in the public sector or even to try and make it more difficult in the private sector on union membership. So no, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, the whole goal of Act 10 was to basically get rid of public employee unions, which, again, when you do that in a correctional facility setting where the correctional officers don't really have any word when it comes to staffing levels, when it comes to security and safety and listening to their ideas and working with them to try and make their job, which is very difficult, again, less stressful, more safe. When you take the employees out of the equation, there's a problem. And so, no, I'm not surprised at all at what they came up with.
Wisconsin has paid out more than $25 million in court settlements and legal fees because of how inmates have been treated at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. And that accounting, by the way, by the Journal Sentinel. Do you think that this new facility that would go up in Milwaukee County can fix what has gone wrong with youth incarceration in Wisconsin?
I hope so. I really do. Whether it will or not, you know, I don't know. But the whole goal, obviously, is to not only provide a safe place for people who work in institutions, but also for the people who live there. And especially when you're dealing with juvenile detention like we were doing, it wasn't safe at all. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't think we would be moving forward with this on a bipartisan basis if we didn't think it was the answer.
Let's bring on a caller now. Anne is with us from Campbellsport. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi. As I understand it, the legislative sessions are done for the year, and this being March with 9 months left in the year, I'm curious, what are legislators doing?
Anne, thank you.
It's a great question, Anne. It depends on the legislator. Some are going to hit the beaches. Some are going to go back home. And go to their other jobs. But Ann brings up a point that I've been talking about for a while. When I first started in this deal, Kate, we would meet in session two or three times a week when we were actually in session. And now we meet so much more or less, first of all. Secondly, the productivity is very partisan. There's a lot of vetoes that have happened in this session. And we just meet less. You know, there's a lot of committee work that goes on, but we just meet less. As a result, you know, tomorrow I think is our last day on the floor and that's it and we're done. And I think we're going to do 80 some or 90 some bills tomorrow. But the productivity, if we were being, you know, let me put it to you this way. There are jobs out there that pay commission for, you know, the more you sell, the more you do, the more you make. Mm-hmm. If the legislators were based on commission, that's how we were paid. I'd probably make like $10 this year. I mean, we really have not met that much at all.
Democratic State Senator John Erpenbach has had a seat in the state Senate since 99. What do you want to know about his time in the legislature? What can you share about political divisions or working across the aisle? What do you want to convey to lawmakers about where you see gaps in resources at this stage in the pandemic? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Senator John Erpenbach here on the Ideas Network. You are with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Democratic State Senator John Erpenbach, who announced he would not seek re-election this last year, and he joins a group of veteran lawmakers from both parties who decided not to run again. During his tenure, he was one of 14 Senate Democrats who left the state in 2011 in a failed attempt to block the passage of Act 10, which limited collective bargaining powers. What do you remember about this time and the protests to try to stop it? What do you want to ask about Democrats' attempts on Medicaid expansion and the work of Joint Finance Committee? 800-642-1234. State Senator John Erpenbach of West Point stays with us for about 8 more minutes. Let's talk a little bit more about Act 10 and how you see, how you look back on your role in 2011 when that, with, you know, within the opposition, which was ultimately unsuccessful in stopping the passage of Act 10. What are you reflecting on so many years later?
Well, Act 10 itself did a lot of damage to the state, did a lot of damage to morale for public employees, did a lot of damage as far as service to the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin, regardless of whether you think Act 10 was a good idea or not. It did damage. And, you know, being a public employee, all of the public employees I've worked with throughout my career have been wonderful. I can't answer my constituents' questions or help them deal with their problem with the DOT or the DNR without calling a public employee. Neither Republicans can either. So the idea that you blame public employees for problems that the legislature created was wrong, and the idea that you lie about the fact that public employees were not paying their health care, which they were at the time, and then you basically tell the state of Wisconsin you pick one side or the other, I think it was the wrong way to govern. And that's not how governors or senators or even presidents should go about their term in office. The idea is to get as many people as possible on board with what you want to do. And there are ways to do that. And the way Governor Walker at the time wanted to deal with Act 10 was he wanted it introduced on a Tuesday and on his desk the following week. And something that significant shouldn't have been done, first of all, in a budget repair bill. But secondly, we should have taken 4 or 5 months in committees and on the floor debating it before we had a vote. But yeah, Act 10, I think, did a lot of damage. And, you know, you talked about the shortages in corrections, for example, or teachers right now. A lot of that has to do with Act 10.
I want to also mention nurses in the mix. For over two mm-hmm. years, nurses at UW Hospital have been attempting to unionize to improve their working conditions, have a voice, especially now in the pandemic. And they said that they can't rely on the goodwill of the hospital administration, but hospital administration argues that their hands are tied by Act 10. So what should nurses do at this point?
They should keep going. I really admire what the nurses are doing. They've, you know, obviously held a couple of rallies. I've noticed a few down in Madison and continue to push to the forefront the idea of unionizing nurses to, as you said, give them a greater voice in what's going on, especially during the pandemic and what we've been through for the past couple of years. So I really admire what they're doing. And hopefully they keep going and they get stronger every single day in what they believe in and figure out a way to try and move all this forward.
I want to talk about retirement. We talked with your colleague, Senate Minority Leader Janet Buley, last month, I think it was, about her retirement reflections and about younger lawmakers becoming leaders and a new generation for the Democratic Party. And she told us, and I'm quoting here, we have a lot of people who are well beyond retirement age, and they're very loyal, but sometimes the right thing to do is get out of the way to make a path to public office for younger people. What are your thoughts on this getting out of the way, as she says, yielding power to a new generation of party leaders?
Well, it's not a situation where I see it as me personally. Janet, I think Janet looks at it differently as far as getting out of the way, because I'm not going to get out of the way. I'm always going to be involved one way or the other. I'm going to answer questions to anybody who wants to run for office and what it's like and what they can expect and help them along the way. But on both sides of the aisle, you're seeing younger, when I say younger, people in their 30s, maybe late 20s, early 40s, stepping up to take over leadership roles. And I think that's great. The downside of what we're seeing as a result of redistricting, and it doesn't matter if it's the left or the right, you're seeing extremes come out in positions of leadership more often. When I say extreme, not necessarily in a bad way, but you have the extremes of the Republicans, the extremes of the Democrats. They win the primaries because the districts are so locked in And then you you expect them to get along at the Capitol when there isn't any room for moderation right now. And again, that gets back to redistricting. But, you know, for the Democrats, I think we should be very excited with who's going to be stepping into the leadership roles and who's talking about running for office. I think we should be really excited about that. So I think it's a good thing.
What is your advice then to Gen Y, Gen Z, Democrats running for office in an atmosphere of deep division, of deep distrust?
Right. They need to recognize the fact that they don't represent just their district. And it doesn't matter if you're above Highway 29, below Highway 29, if you're on the left or the right of 51. Wisconsin is Wisconsin. It's unique. It's diverse. It's different from one end of the state to the other in political beliefs and so on. And the idea that you need to step out of your comfort zone, which is your own district boundaries, and get around the state, talk to people, listen to what they have to say, get to know them, because you're going to be voting on things that have an impact on their lives. So the idea that whether you are a conservative legislator from, let's just say, northern Wisconsin, or a liberal legislator from Milwaukee County or Dane County, it's your responsibility to listen to people who you don't agree with and find out why they think the way they think, and then see if there's any common ground.
Talking with State Senator John Erpenbach, who after 24 years in the State Senate decided not to run for re-election. You can join in. How have state politics changed or become too divisive? Are lawmakers missing important opportunities to cooperate? 800-642-1234. Let's look at marijuana legalization. A Marquette Law School poll just released last week says public support of legalizing marijuana in Wisconsin is growing. 61% of state residents polled now say they support legalizing marijuana. And that includes, for the first time, a majority, 51% of those who identified themselves as Republicans. Do you think that the momentum is turning here in favor of legalization?
Yeah, the momentum's turning, but that doesn't mean it's going to become law. You know, the medical marijuana, for example, has been polls very highly in the state of Wisconsin and has been for a long time, but it hasn't done anything to make it become law. The expansion of Medicaid polls highly, but that's not law either. So what the people of the state might want when it comes in terms of marijuana isn't going to happen until certain legislators change their mind or actually start listening to people and forward at least medical marijuana use in the state of Wisconsin, if not full legalization.
What stands in the way to becoming law when you do see strong public support for a particular policy issue?
Legislatively, it's ignorance. It's legislators sticking their head in the sand. They don't want to know the facts. They don't want to listen to it. Therefore, they become really ignorant of what the issues actually are. I mean, on the issue of medical marijuana, you have moms and dads and grandma and grandpas and kids breaking the law, getting marijuana, getting it to their loved one because that helps them with their debilitating diseases that they have to deal with every day. Nobody should be put in a situation to do that. And legislators who are opposed to medical marijuana, at the very least, are ignorant. And they don't want to talk about it because, oh, my God, it's marijuana. It's frustrating. You know, there are things that I didn't necessarily agree with when I first got elected, but the more I learned about something, the more I started to favor it. Medical marijuana was one of those things. When I was first elected, it's like, yeah, no, I don't agree with that. But when you talk to people and you get the facts, you change your mind. So it's up to those legislators who are opposed to marijuana at one end or the other to go out and actually start gathering facts. And keep in mind, one more thing about this, Kate, is we're an island here in Wisconsin. Mm. You know, you've got full legalization in Michigan. You have full legalization in Illinois. I think it's medical up in Minnesota. I don't know what Iowa's doing yet. I think they may be moving toward medical, but we're an island here. And sooner or later, it's going to happen in this state. I just wish it would happen sooner.
Very, very quickly before I have to let you go, sooner or later, what about Medicaid expansion, Wisconsin being one of a dozen states that has not expanded Medicaid coverage under the Affordable Care Act? How likely is that to happen?
Well, I don't know. Not with the current crop of Republicans there right now. There are legislators I work with who think that Medicaid expansion is an incentive to keep people poor, which is just a stupid way to look at life. The idea that somebody who's making $7.75 an hour won't have access to Badger Care is ridiculous, but that's what happens here in Wisconsin. At the same time, we've thrown away billions of dollars of our money. That's our taxpayers' money out sitting out in D.C. Because we won't expand Medicaid here in the state to 133% of federal poverty levels. So this has been a frustrating one. And for any conservative out there who basically, you know, views themselves as a, you know, keeping an eye on the taxpayers' dime and making sure that we get what's owed to us, they're not doing their job. As a result, people who don't have health insurance are stuck in jobs that, and there are some out there working full time and don't have access to benefits. And to me, that's just wrong.
State Senator John Erpenbach, thank you for joining us.
All right, Kate, good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you. State Senator John Erpenbach, Democrat, represents the 27th District. The State Capitol Report continues with State Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke, who is also not seeking another term in office. You can join in 800-642-1234. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. On this first Monday of March, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Assembly's second-in-command, Majority Leader Jim Steinke, announced in January he will not seek re-election this fall. His chamber wrapped up its floor session late last month, passing a slate of election and voting law bills. They also passed a $42 million replacement for Lincoln Hills, the state youth prison. What would you like to ask the Assembly's Republican Majority Leader? What bills or policy issues matter most to you? 800-642-1234. Representative Jim Steinke of Kakana represents the 5th District in the Fox Valley. Representative Steinke, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Let's first start with the redistricting reaction. How do you feel about what the state Supreme Court ruled in favor of Governor Evers' maps? And how do you feel about this outcome?
Well, I think the maps that the governor introduced in court are problematic. First of all, there was no transparent process used in drawing those maps. We're not sure who drew them, how they drew them, or what process they used.
He did wasn't it the People's Maps Commission, you know, having all these people?
No, it was not.
Okay.
No, it was not. The People's Maps Commission were resoundedly rejected by both parties in the legislature. Governor Evers in court used a secret process to draw those maps. Those maps didn't reflect what the People's Maps Commission put out. And there were several issues with them. We think they violate the Voting Rights Act. And they actually drew two senators in together, one that's not even up for re-election, so he doesn't even have a district if these maps go through. So there's several issues with those maps, and that's why we're asking the U.S. Supreme Court to take a look at it.
So on the issue of violating the Federal Voting Rights Act, that taking race into account when they should not have, do you think that SCOTUS, the High Court, the Supreme Court, will take this up?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. We're filing today with the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll see if they end up taking this issue up or not, but it is something that I think both parties have an issue with. Senator Lena Taylor has already said that she's considering bringing the Black Caucus together to file suit in court as well over these maps, because they're concerned with the dilution of the Black vote under these maps.
WisPolitics says Evers' map would maintain Republican majorities in both chambers of the legislature. How much of a difference do you think would the governor's maps versus the Republican legislature's proposals make in future elections?
I'm not sure it'll make a difference. And this kind of goes to the whole point that Democrats in Wisconsin have been complaining for years about gerrymandered districts and how Republicans are, the maps that they drew are enshrining Republican majorities in the maps for a decade or more. Governor Evers' maps do the same thing, and largely because demographics in Wisconsin play a big role in the maps. It's not so much about where the lines are, it's more about how the population is spread out throughout Wisconsin. Vast majority of the Democratic vote is packed into cities. And in order to unpack those, you literally have to gerrymander to increase the number of Democratic districts, because those votes on the Democratic side are so concentrated in urban areas.
Along the lines of elections, last week you took to Twitter promising you would do, quote, everything possible to stop efforts to give politicians power over elections. And on the same day, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, his election probe, released a report calls for the legislature to seriously consider decertifying the state's 2020 presidential election results. What do you make of the Gabelman report?
Well, that part of the report I disagree with wholeheartedly. I mean, everybody that's taken a look at this said that that's impossible to do. I think it's actually, even if it were possible, which it isn't, I think it's dangerous to put politicians in charge of deciding elections. There's nobody more self-interested in elections than politicians are. And if you can imagine, if we had one individual that was in charge, one partisan politician in charge of determining whether an election was valid or not, you can imagine what the issues could be coming from that. The political pressure, especially over the course of the last couple of years, would be enormous on a single individual, especially somebody that's a partisan. And it's just a bad idea.
Along those lines, you also said about this 136-page Gabelman report that, as you say, they're decertifying the election, that you called it a fool's errand, but you also said to focus on the future. And I'm curious, what does focusing on the future entail?
It entails looking at, you know, doing some of the things that we've done over the course of the last year or so. The Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau, which is a gold standard in the legislature, took a look at this last election and found a number of issues that where election officials or the Wisconsin Elections Commission didn't follow the letter of the law. And that's a serious issue. Now, I don't believe it would have, any of these issues would have resulted in the election results being different, but perception in many cases is reality to people. And without that confidence that the law is being followed, that leads to some of these questions that people have surrounding the election results. So we should follow those Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau recommendations. And that's what we did in a lot of these bills that we put forward, and hoping that the governor finds a way to sign them, although he's vetoed most of them that we've put forward to this date, or all of them, actually.
Well, Governor Evers has said repeatedly over and over that any new laws making it harder to vote is a non-starter with him. And so, you know, you and your colleagues in final day of work on the floor put forth all of these election and voting bills, and all other things fall off the table as a priority. You know, do you think that something will change? And why would you do that when you know that the governor doesn't want to make voting harder?
Well, none of these bills make voting harder. It just requires clerks, voters, and the Wisconsin Elections Commission to follow the law. I don't think that's too much to ask. It's not about making voting harder. It's about making people follow the law when they are voting. And I think that's the least that we can expect out of our election system. Again, this is a nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau recommendations. Most of the time when the Legislative Audit Bureau comes out with recommendations, we put forward bills, and they are bipartisan in the action on the floor a vast majority of the time. This is the only time in my memory where recommendations from the LAB have come out, hit the floor, and been partisan. It's just not something we normally see.
Before we move on here, your constitutional amendment that you wrote saying only U.S. citizens can vote, that is also federal law. Wouldn't that be duplicative?
No, not at all. So the federal law ensures that only U.S. citizens can vote in federal elections. As we've seen across the country, New York being the latest example, in local elections, states have the ability to determine who gets to vote and who doesn't. And in New York, they just enshrined in law the ability for illegal immigrants to vote in local elections. This is something that I don't believe is right. I don't think a vast majority of people in the state or the country would believe that it's right to have people that are here illegally voting in local elections. So what we're trying to do is tighten that language up in the state constitution, because it says that we're turning that from U.S. citizens may vote to only U.S. citizens may vote in state elections. So it's a pretty simple fix, and I think it'll have broad bipartisan support once it hits the ballot in probably 2023.
Jim Steinecke with us in the State Assembly Majority Leader, represents the 5th District in the Fox Valley. You can join in, 800-642-1234. What would you like to ask the Assembly's Republican Majority Leader? Is there a bill you wish lawmakers passed before closing the sessions? Give us your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Eric now in Madison. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hey, Jim, what's your feelings on the $1.1 million Russian oligarch money that was donated to Walker and funneled through Scott Walker? GOP is a disgrace to the country.
Okay, Eric. And so, Eric, wondering feelings on dark money in politics there. What is your take there, Representative?
Yeah, I have no idea what he's referring to, but... I mean, obviously, our thoughts and prayers are with the Ukrainian people right now. I think the United States as a whole needs to stand together with Ukraine as they fight this unconscionable war that Russia has forced upon that country. We're seeing incredible amounts of pain and suffering and civilians being murdered throughout that country by the Russian regime, and that's got to come to an end.
Talking with outgoing Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke on this half of the State Capitol Report, did legislation you care about advance this session? What about marijuana legalization, election and voting laws you're watching? What do you want the state to do with its budget surplus? When should it use its rainy day fund? Questions there. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Representative Jim Steinecke here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke, the second-ranking Republican in his chamber, announced in January not seeking re-election, and he joins a group of veteran lawmakers from both parties who have stepped down or have decided not to run again in November. What do you want to say about this moment in Wisconsin politics? Can the legislature work together to pass bills affecting you and your community? Still time, 800-642-1234. Representative Jim Steinecke with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to John now in Appleton. John, hi, what's on your mind?
Good morning, and thank you each for your service. Say, in 2015, Wisconsin passed Act 302, which prohibited municipalities from putting laws down to make their areas greener and cleaner. It took away local control to ban single-use plastics. Currently, Assembly Bill 342 and Senate Bill 349 seek to overturn that law passed back in 2015. I'm wondering if the representative has comments on this. Why this continually gets put up by Katrina Shankland and it goes nowhere?
John, thank you for that question. Representative Steinecke.
Yeah, thanks, John, for the question. I appreciate it. I mean, the truth is, so the act you're talking about went into place a number of years ago. Obviously, it had the support of a majority of the legislature at the time. The bills that came forward this session did not have a majority of support in the legislature, and if you follow the activities of the legislature, the only bills that make it to the floor for a vote are bills that do have majority support. We don't put every bill on the floor. We don't put bills on the floor of the assembly or the Senate that don't have the support to pass. So Unfortunately, the authors of those pieces of legislation didn't have the support necessary to bring them to the floor.
John, thanks for the question. Let's look at marijuana legalization and that path. Marquette University Law School's latest poll found for the first time a majority of support among Republican leading residents for legalization. What are your feelings there, and what do feelings look like in your caucus for passing some form of legalization legislation?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. I obviously other states throughout the country are moving in that direction. I think that's likely the direction at some point that the state of Wisconsin goes. I think it's more likely that legalization occurs when it comes to medicinal marijuana, using it for the purposes of alleviating pain and treating some illnesses. Recreational marijuana, I think, has a much tougher path to get through the legislature and eventually signed into law. But I do think we're heading in that direction. It's just finding the right legislation that is tight enough to pass that medicinal marijuana, something I've always been a supporter of.
Well, along those lines, let's go to Rana in Cameron. Hi, Rana, or is it Rona?
Hope you had it right first. It's Rana.
Rana, thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and good morning to your guest. I've cared for my father for 3 years with debilitating Parkinson's, and I've been extremely frustrated by the fact that medicinal marijuana was not available to him through the state of Wisconsin. It would have greatly alleviated some of his issues. And I'm just really wondering if there's any relationship to the marijuana being blocked for usage in Wisconsin on any level, if it's being blocked by the Wisconsin Tavern League, because they have such a chokehold on so many people in our state, that I'm wondering if it's part of it is their power blocking, bringing relief to so many Wisconsinites. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Rana, thank you for that question on the power of the lobby.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Rana. And I'm sorry to hear about your dad. I don't believe that that's the main issue. I think the main issue is really the ability of the legislature to craft a medicinal marijuana bill in a way that doesn't open up the door wide to recreational marijuana. I think that's the biggest concern amongst lawmakers and law enforcement in general, that it doesn't, because a medicinal marijuana bill doesn't become a de facto recreational marijuana bill. And that's one of the challenges that we've faced over the years in trying to craft something that would help people like your dad without making it, basically a recreational marijuana bill. We've had some challenges trying to write language that's tight enough to just keep it to the medicinal purposes.
Talking with Jim Steinke, State Assembly Majority Leader, represents the 5th District in the Fox Valley, taking your questions on legislature and the look ahead in his chamber, 800-642-1234. Rick is joining us from Rhinelander. Rick, hi. What's on your mind?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm concerned about the Gableman investigation. I believe it's a waste of the taxpayers' dollars, but more importantly, the representative had mentioned that perceptions are realities with the electorate, and I think that's true. And I believe that the Gableman investigation is more prejudicial than probative. I don't think there's any question about the 2020 election. The courts have examined this. There's no substantial fraud that would have changed the outcome. And it appears to me that the entire reason that the Gableman investigation exists is simply to continue with that perception that there was somehow some malfeasance or what's been called the big lie that Donald Trump keeps continuing to spout. And unfortunately, it gets echoed with the majority of Republican legislators. And I just would like a comment about how you can justify spending $750,000 to continue this.
Rick, thank you.
Yeah,
Representative.
Thanks, John. I think the fact is that it is a vast majority of Republican legislators in the state have not continued to say that the election was stolen. There are a couple of our members that are pushing hard in that direction, but a vast majority of our members understand what happened in the 2020 election. And while there may have been some issues that along the lines of what the Nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau reported, I think a vast majority of our elected officials here in the state believe what I believe is that while there were some issues, it doesn't rise to the level of affecting the overall results. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't address those issues that nonpartisan agency found in their audit report. So that's one of the things that we've got to focus on going forward, because there is a segment of Wisconsinites that have serious concerns about the what went on in the 2020 election. And that's what we've been fighting to uncover and show them, that while there are some issues, didn't likely affect the result, but we're gonna do everything we can to tighten up those issues that were found in that nonpartisan report.
Rick, thanks for the call. I want to move on. You co-chairing the Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities. And this year we saw Governor Evers sign into law some of the policing bills originating from your task force. How do you feel about the work and what you accomplished there?
It's one of the things I'm most proud of in my tenure in the legislature, beyond even the topic, which I think is important. Being able to show that a Republican legislator working with a Democratic legislator can bring people together, sit around the table to discuss very difficult issues, very emotional issues, and figure out a way to come to consensus around those issues. And I don't know that any of us would have predicted the success that we had, especially early on going in, right after the Jacob Blake incident, and how
the shooting of Jacob Blake in 2020.
Yeah, mm-hmm. How heated those conversations were. Coming out of that, it's very difficult to make headway on issues like that when they are so heated. But we were able to bring law enforcement together with communities of color and have discussions over several months, and each side, kind of giving, learning from each other and figuring out a way to come to consensus. So we've seen a number of those bills that were introduced become law already. The Senate just passed another set of laws that we had already passed through the Assembly that are headed to the governor's desk. And hopefully we can get a signature on those, because I'm really proud of law enforcement in this state and how they do their jobs. And I'm even more proud that they came to the table and listened to people from communities of color and how they can make their profession even better.
Representative Steinecke, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinecke of Kaukauna, first elected to the chamber in 2010. Just ahead, we talk with the author of a new book exploring the Flat Earth conspiracy movement. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.